Hello, this is Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article, Three People Hurt in Weekend Shootings, a staff report. Danville police continue to investigate a number of shooting incidents during the weekend that left three people hurt. According to Police Commander Joshua Webb, officers were called at 2:20 a.m. on Sunday to the area of Williams and Elm Streets after a report of a man with a gunshot wound. Officers talked to two victims who had suffered gunshot wounds. The victims were a 20-year-old man and a 19-year-old man, both from Danville, according to Webb. The 20-year-old man had a wound to his shoulder, and the 19-year-old had a wound to his lower back. The victims told police they were getting into a vehicle when they heard multiple gunshots being fired from an unknown location. The victims were both transported to an area hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening wounds. No other injuries were reported. Around 1:30 a.m. Monday, police responded to the area of the 1200 block of Chandler Street in reference to a female with a gunshot wound. Officers located a 22-year-old Danville woman with gunshot wounds to her hand and abdomen. The victim told police she was at a party in the 1200 block of Chandler when two black men began shooting at her. The woman was transported to an area hospital for treatment of her wounds and is in stable condition. No other injuries were reported. Police checked the scene and surrounding areas, but were unable to locate any suspects, according to Webb. Around 12:11 a.m. Tuesday, police again responded to the area of the 1200 block of Chandler after a report of shots fired. Upon arrival, officers learned a residence had been struck by the gunfire. No one was inside the residence at the time of the shooting, according to Webb. And it is believed that this incident was related to Monday's shooting in the same area. No injuries were reported. Also Tuesday, police responded at 12:28 a.m. to the area of the 300 block of Alexander Street for a report of shots fired. Officers spoke with a victim who stated she heard multiple gunshots at her residence and her residence was struck multiple times by the gunfire. The woman stated she was inside her residence and didn't see where the shooting came from. A witness stated he observed two black male suspects walk up to the residence and start shooting, and then the subjects ran from the area in an unknown direction, according to police. No injuries were reported. The investigation into these incidents continues. Anyone who has information regarding these crimes is asked to call Danville Police at 431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 446-TIPS. Next, we'll go to the article, Aldermen Hear About Solicitors, City Swamped with Permit Requests Following Storms, by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. With the recent storms, the city has been inundated with businesses seeking solicitation permits to go door to door or set up temporary locations to reach out to customers who want to fix hail damage. Danville City Clerk Lisa Monson passed out a list to the Danville City Council's Public Services Committee Tuesday night with 12 businesses listed. The businesses received or have pending solicitation or transient merchant temporary business permits. The companies have a range of 1 to 10 staff persons, Monson's report stated. Most are construction companies that are getting solicitation permits to cover themselves for when they talk to surrounding neighbors, her report said. Monson said residents can ask the business persons to show their city permit and identification badge. Interim Police Chief Chris Yates said there have been a few complaints with solicitors, but the police department is trying to protect the public by doing background and criminal history checks on the persons seeking permits. Yates said of any business coming from out of town, such as Michigan or Pennsylvania or Ohio, if a problem comes up later, they could then be a state or two away. He compared the background checks to ones they also do with taxicab drivers and others. In other business, the city also discussed an Employee Assistance Program, or EAP. City Comptroller Shelley Scott said the issue came up recently after city employees went through active shooter response training, and it was discussed how the city doesn't have a program for employees that are dealing with post-traumatic issues, such as public safety employees. "We had an incident recently," Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. also said, adding that there were concerns with an individual harming himself or others. "This kind of thing could help us in that situation." He said an EAP could help with mental health, stress, and other issues to protect the city, their employees, and their families. The city has a quote from Perspectives LTD of Chicago, "For $5,700 a year, for about 250 full-time employees. It would be $1.90 per month in an EAP work-life fee per employee for a 6-session per episode." Aldermen were supportive of the program, with Ward 1 Alderwoman Brenda Brown saying she thought it was a worthwhile investment. Employees could refer themselves to the program without city officials knowing, or a city supervisor, for example, could insist upon a referral for an employee, Scott said. Ward 5 Alderman Tom Stone asked them to find out whether the program could be utilized for screening new hires. The Perspectives agreement will go to the Danville City Council next week for action. Also on Tuesday, committee members discussed city employee residency requirements. The committee largely agrees that if the city was to be less restrictive, then requiring all city employees with union contracts already differing to live within the city, then it should only be relaxed for them to live within 5 miles of the city's limits. The committee also favors the employees living outside the city to pay equivalent property taxes to the city if their house was inside city limits. The issue will go to the Public Works Committee next month. Now we'll head to the article, Honor Flight, Veteran Enjoys Hero's Welcome After 53 Years, by Mary Wyckoff. When Danny Owens left the service in 1966, he and other veterans faced hostility from people who opposed the Vietnam War. Earlier this month, he was among those who got a hero's welcome when they landed in Washington, D.C., and later, Springfield. "This was the welcome we never got," Owen said, still amazed at the outpouring of support from hundreds of people at the Abraham Lincoln Capital Airport. Strangers cheered, shook hands, waved banners, and hugged the vets returning from a Land of Lincoln honor flight. "He never shook so many hands," his wife Sue said. Owens was among 87 veterans who took the day-long trip to Washington to visit the monuments dedicated to vets from World War II to Vietnam. On board were two World War II, 10 Korean War, and 75 Vietnam War veterans. Owens nearly ran out of superlatives while describing the trip. "Awesome, amazing, beautiful, unbelievable. I just had a great time," he said. "It was a long day, but it was a good day." Owens joined the Army in 1962. A week after he graduated from Oakwood High School. He was stationed with the 3rd Infantry Division in Germany and drove the commander in the tank outfit. He was discharged in 1966 as a Specialist E5 and keeps in touch with people he met in the military, including his platoon sergeant. After leaving the military, Owens bought a 1967 Corvette, which he still has. He worked at Heister for 40 years and started Owens Excavating and Trucking in 1972. Owens comes from a military family, with his father serving in World War I, his brother in World War II, and then his service in the Vietnam War era. His wife found out about the honor flight, and Owens signed up, waiting 2 years for an opening. The honor flight flew into Ronald Reagan National Airport in D.C., where they were greeted by a cheering crowd. At the World War II memorial, hundreds of schoolchildren asked the veterans about their service, which impressed Owens. The veterans also visited the Korean and Vietnam War memorials, as well as Arlington National Cemetery for the changing of the guard ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknowns. Other stops included the Lincoln Memorial, the National Air and Science Museum, the U.S. Marine Corps Memorial, and the U.S. Air Force Memorial. All veterans were assigned a guardian, and Owens's was Pam Will of Siegel. Owens was impressed with the changing of the guard at Arlington, and proud to know the soldiers involved are part of the 3rd Infantry Division. He also saw the grave of World War II hero Audie Murphy, also part of that division. Owens took some name rubbings at the Vietnam War Wall, describing it as a beautiful memorial. The Korean War Memorial was a tearjerker, he said, saying of the statues, "They look like they're looking right at you." On the plane ride home, each veteran received a packet of letters from relatives and schoolchildren, thanking them for their service. "I haven't had a mail call for 55 years. It was awesome," he said. Owens and his wife, Sue, have been married since 1971. They have 2 grown children, Beth Price of Fithian and Darren Owens of Oakwood, who now runs Owens Excavating, and 3 grandchildren. Owens is a member of the Potomac American Legion Post 428 and Anchor Masonic Lodge. He recommends the trip to others, saying, "I think anyone who can go should. It's amazing. I'd go again in a minute." The organizers treated people well, and the trip was well organized. Honor Flight is free to veterans, but guardians undergo training and pay a fee. Veteran applications continue to be accepted with flight priority given in the following order: World War II, then Korean War era, followed by Vietnam War era. Any certified terminally ill veteran should contact Land of Lincoln directly. Because every veteran flies with a guardian escort, applications for future guardians are also being accepted. This may be any able-bodied person 18 to 70 years old, except for veterans who have already been honored with a flight or a spouse or significant other of a veteran on a flight. The guardian fee includes Land of Lincoln training, cap and t-shirt, round-trip flight, bus tour during the day, meals and snacks, refreshments, and the privilege of spending the day honoring the veterans. Land of Lincoln is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that receives no government funding. It honors the veterans with a trip to D.C. due to generous donations, sponsorship, fundraising events, merchandise sales, and supporting efforts of the many local businesses, individuals, and organizations within its service area. Since its inception in 2009, Land of Lincoln Honor Flight has been privileged to serve 4,191 veterans on 54 flights. We'll now go to the death notices. James Edward Jim Smith, 76, of DeBary, Florida, formerly of Peotone, died on Sunday, August 5th, 2018. A memorial service will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, June 1st, 2019, at Blurton Funeral Home at 309 East Washington in Hoopston. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Burial will be following the service in Floral Hill Cemetery. Memorials can be made to Motel 70 at 930 Tree Farm Road in High Hill, Missouri. Denver Carl Ball, 74, of Georgetown, died on Tuesday, May 21st, 2019. A celebration of Denver's life will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, May 30th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center of Georgetown. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, May 29th, at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in Georgetown Cemetery. Memorial donations may be given in his name to Southside Church of Christ. Norma Jean Kite Duncan, 77, of Covington, Indiana, passed away on Friday, May 24th. A celebration of Norma's life will be at 10 a.m. Eastern on Thursday, May 30th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center of Covington. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, May 29th, at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest at Danville National Cemetery in Danville. James Thomas Alford died on Sunday, May 12th. Memorial services will commence at 10 a.m. Friday, May 31st at Second Baptist Church at 934 North Franklin Street in Danville. Albert Tina Clark, 85, of Danville, died on Friday, May 24th, 2019. A celebration of life service will commence at noon on Friday, May 31st, at New Life Church of Faith in Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of his services. Interment will be at Spring Hill Cemetery. A public viewing will be 1 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 29th, at Leek and Sons Funeral Home. Dr. Daniel Bever Crane, 83, of Danville, died on Tuesday, May 28th, 2019. Friends may call at noon Eastern until time of service at 2 p.m. on Saturday, June 1st, at Hillsborough United Methodist Church. Burial with military honors will be in Rose Hill Cemetery in Hillsborough, Indiana. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to American Legion Post 210 of Danville. Alfred Curley Arms, 79, of West Lebanon, Indiana, died on Sunday, May 26th. Visitation will be at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport on Friday, May 31st, from 4 p.m. Eastern until time of service at 7 p.m. Memorial contributions may be made to the donor's choice. Lieutenant Colonel Michael Dennis Tate, USAF retired, 75, died on May 23, 2019, in Gulfport, Mississippi. Funeral services will be at 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday, May 29th, with the visitation starting at 11 a.m. at Riemann Family Funeral Home in Gulfport. The interment will follow at Biloxi National Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial contributions to your local homeless veteran organization. Donald Don Eugene Johnson, 80, died on Sunday, May 26th. A celebration of life service will be at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, May 29th, at Cedar Grove Church of the Nazarene in Danville. Visitation will be from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. prior to the service at the church. In lieu of flowers, the family requests plants or donations made to Cedar Grove Church of the Nazarene. Funeral services for Arlie Bud Brown of Midway, Arkansas will be 2 p.m. Wednesday, May 29th, with a visitation 1 hour before the funeral service at Joins Funeral Home in Villa Grove, Illinois. Memorials may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Brenda K. Stockton, 77, of Hoopston, died on Sunday, May 26th. Per her wishes, she will be cremated and no services will be held. Barbara Black, 91, of Danville, died on Sunday, May 26th. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. We'll now go to the article, District 118 to Consider Security System for Schools, by Carol Rome, Danville. Danville District 118 school board members are expected to move forward tonight with a plan to beef up security at two of the district's school buildings. At the March 13th school board meeting, a 10-person safety committee consisting mostly of District 118 staff presented what its members discovered after touring a Decatur Alternative School and Joliet Central High School to see how those schools deal with safety issues and to offer recommendations. One of the recommendations was installing the Raptor Visitor Identification System at Danville High School and North Ridge Middle School, a system the committee saw in action when it visited the Joliet High School. All visitors to the Joliet High School pass through a metal detector and submit their driver's license to be scanned through the Raptor system, which runs a background check and issues a temporary picture ID that is to be worn on school grounds. The visitor's bag is searched, and then he or she is escorted to the destination. The school holds on to the driver's license until the visitor is ready to leave. The District 118 committee recommended to the board in March that the Raptor system be installed at both the Circle Drive and Clock Tower entrances at DHS, and at two entrances at North Ridge. The system would be set to check the sex offender database. Visitors would relinquish their driver's license and be issued with a temporary picture ID. With what's going on across the country, this makes sense, Board President Bill Dobble said, of installing the system. It will show up if they are on the sex offender list. The cost for the equipment that will be installed at two entrances at DHS and at two entrances at North Ridge will be $2,409 per building, Dobble said. An annual subscription for the service will cost $5,000 per building. Also on Wednesday, the board will consider a proposal dealing with the North Ridge Honors. Northwestern University completed an audit of the district's Motivating Academically Talented Students, or MATS program, and the audit findings were integral in adjusting the MATS program to ensure proper selection and increase equity and access to the program for qualified students. The audit recommended the MATS program at North Ridge include students that did not qualify for MATS in all academic areas, but did show talent in a particular subject area. MATS students automatically would be eligible to continue in the program in all four core areas, whereas students who show strength in a particular core area or areas, but who are not in MATS, would be able to access the challenging curriculum offered in a particular subject area. Also, the district wants to increase the number of subjects in which 8th grade students can earn high school credit. Currently, students can take algebra in 8th grade, but another opportunity would allow students that excel in science to enroll in a high school biology course offered at the 8th grade level and taught by a certified high school teacher. Students that take biology in 8th grade would complete the required science course sequence a year early, affording them the opportunity to take more advanced placement science courses prior to high school graduation. It is recommended that the board also allow the MATS program at North Ridge to include qualified students in a particular subject area in MATS courses, as recommended by the Northwestern University MATS audit. Also, the district wants to add freshman biology as an 8th grade course for high school credit for the 2020 to 2021 school year. The committee will also consider amending Northeast Elementary Magnet School's calendar changes. The committee will hear information about the 2019-2020 school calendar. At the traditional schools, the first day of school for students will be August 13th. Fall break will be October 14th to 18th, and spring break will be March 23rd through 27th. At Northeast, which is a balanced calendar school, the first day of school for students will be July 22nd. Fall break will be September 30th through October 18th, and spring break will be March 23rd through April 10th. For pre-kindergarten, the first day of school for students will be August 14th. Fall break will be August 14th through 18th, and spring break will be March 23rd through 27th. On Wednesday, the committee will also review a first reading of the MIECHV grant, Central Intake Referral, Home Visiting Service, Outreach, and Marketing Procedure. The committee will hear about Turn Off Your Technology. District 118 parents, students, and staff will be challenged to turn technology off this summer. District officials are encouraging parents to communicate with their children and pledge to turn off technology from 5 to 7 p.m. each night. This would provide an excellent opportunity for family dinner, have a conversation, or read a book together. Now we'll go to the article, House Sends Graduated Tax Question to Voters by Jerry Nowicki of the Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. A constitutional amendment that would allow the General Assembly to set higher tax rates on greater amounts of income passed its last legislative hurdle Monday and will head to the voters for final approval about 18 months from now. After more than 3 hours of debate, in which all 44 House Republicans spoke on the floor, the vote cleared its constitutionally mandated 3/5 majority by 2 votes. All 73 representatives voting in favor were Democrats. While Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker played no formal role in the legislative process to put the amendment on the ballot, at least one Democrat who previously said he would vote against the bill credited the governor for his sudden switch. "I was a very vocal critic about this. Obviously, I came out with some concerns," Representative Jonathan Carroll, a Northbrook Democrat, said. "Governor Pritzker reached out to me right away, had some conversations with me, and heard my issue is property taxes. Along with his help and the help of my colleagues in the House and Senate, we're going to form a property tax task force to review how we tax in Illinois for property taxes and make sure that we do it better and we do it right. The state does not levy or collect property taxes in Illinois. Only local taxing bodies such as school boards, municipal governments, and counties have that authority. The largest contributor to most local tax bills are K-12 schools, which for years have faced funding shortfalls and proration from insufficient revenues provided by the state. Still, Carroll and Representative Sam Yingling, a Grays-like Democrat, who also said at one time he would vote against the graduated tax, said state action is needed to overhaul the property tax system, and the graduated tax is part of that process. "The current system does not work, and we all know that," Yingling said in his floor speech. "The process of property tax restructuring will not be easy, but I submit that process begin today." Republicans, however, were more skeptical of any actual tax relief coming from the bill. And House Minority Leader Jim Durkin, Republican of Western Springs, accused the governor of horse trading in order to get the 73 votes in favor. "Let's make no mistake. Today's vote is the end result of the Illinois Democrats' historical, ravenous, irresponsible budgeting and spending," Durkin said. However, it was also clear that today's vote was a fait accompli. "It's a foregone conclusion. I know how this bill went down. I know how this amendment went down. And please, don't think that there wasn't any horse trading to get these votes. I know better. You know better. We know better." Senate Joint Resolution Constitutional Amendment 1's passage means the voters in November of 2020 will be given the opportunity to decide whether the state can have the authority to set graduated tax rates. Either 60% of those voting on the question or the majority of those voting in the election will have to support the measure for it to become law. While Pritzker's political capital helped guide the measure through the legislature, his financial capital is expected to play an outsized role in the media campaign for its passage. That's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. As always, thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to the next time we get to read together.